Did you know that Gymboree Play & Music offers online classes? Come play the virtual way. We now offer online playtime classes, and you can register for your first class free online at gymboreeclasses.com. Welcome to Season 2 of the Parent Pod Podcast by Gymboree Play & Music. I'm the host, Adonica Shaw. The Parent Pod is a weekly conversation about early childhood development topics for parents and for caretakers, grandparents even. Our goal is to make sure that we arm our parents with the best information possible and to drive conversations around all things early childhood development for families with children 0 to 5 years old. While the content of the show is meant to be informative, it is not meant to replace the guidance of your personal physician, therapist, or pediatrician, although we do invite you to sound off on social media around the content of the show and share your own personal experiences around anything that we discuss. That said, I'm excited to introduce you to the first guest of Season 2. Today, we're speaking with Amy Morin. Amy is an author most known for her books, 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do and 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do. She actually has plans to release 13 Things Strong Kids Do in September of 2021. She's the editor-in-chief of Very Well Mind, a psychology lecturer at Northeastern University. She regularly writes for and contributes to Forbes, Business Insider, and Psychology Today, and her articles on mental strength reach more than 2 million people each month. Her TED Talk, The Secret to Becoming Mentally Strong, also has more than 15 million views and is one of the highest viewed TED Talks of all time. Today, I'm excited to speak to her about the things that we as parents can do to strengthen our relationship with our children and to be much better caregivers, listeners, and guides for their development and overall mental strength. Amy, thank you so much for being here on the Parent Pod podcast by Gymboree Play & Music. It's such a wonderful treat to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I have to tell you, if the audience isn't aware, I actually have a really funny story about how I actually know Amy. She and I, several years back, happened to both speak at the same TEDx event. And so when it came time to putting together a series of interviews on influential experts and people that I felt would be wonderful to introduce to you, Amy was definitely at the top of that list. I'm very familiar with her work. And for those of you who aren't, she is the author of a suite of books, but I would, and you feel free to jump in and tell me if I'm wrong here, Amy, but I think the one that most people are aware of is the 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do.
Correct.
So, yes. Okay. And so from that first book, I know that there is one that is more geared towards women. But for today and the purposes of this show, we really want to get into the book that you created for parents. And so I don't know if everybody knows that there is actually a parenting version of this book. Amy, can you just give us a brief overview of maybe the things that people may not be aware that are in the parenting book versus the one that might be more well known to them?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So when my first book came out, I started just getting a lot of questions from parents that say, how do I now teach this to my kids? And I thought about writing a kid book at that point, but I thought rather than write a book for your 8-year-old, why don't I just write a book that would help parents become coaches for their kids? And so while I do have a kid book coming out next year, I wanted to write the parenting book first. So this one is really about how do you interact with your kids? How do you discipline them in a way that they'll grow up to become mentally strong? So it has a lot to do with your communication with your kids, your ability to allow them to experience a certain degree of difficulty, of pain, but at the same time that you're coaching them along. We're not just throwing them to the wolves, but that you're giving them the exercises and skills and strategies that they need to manage their emotions, to figure out how do they change their behavior so that they can learn from their mistakes. And so that they can really take these tools as they grow up and then apply them to their adult lives too.
One thing I've wondered is, I'm going to defer to you on this one because I know I can do all of the internet research that I want,
but why do that if I've got an expert, you know, right here with me? And so I would want to know from you, at what age can children realistically start to understand the concept of mental toughness or emotional agility or the ability to be disciplined around their emotions in your professional experience?
So parents can start teaching it pretty young. 3-4 years old, the preschool years are a great time to start instilling some of these things. You can teach kids really simple principles like the difference between feelings and behaviors. It's okay to feel angry. It's not okay to hit when you're angry. So when parents start talking about feelings at a really young age and they start intervening when kids are acting inappropriately in a way that teaches them, it's not just about punishing them, but it's about teaching them and moving forward so that they can become better. You can start really early, and your earliest interactions with your kids in terms of discipline, in terms of how you handle difficult situations. I mean, temper tantrums are great examples to start intervening in a way that helps kids become mentally strong. And to be clear, it's not about toughening them up, or it's not about exposing them to hardship just for the sake of raising tough kids. And it's also not about teaching them, oh, you shouldn't cry. Sometimes I'll have parents that would come into my therapy office and say that, like, oh, he didn't cry at all this week, so he's doing better. But that's not the case either. We want to teach kids that it's okay to have those feelings. It's just about how you deal with those feelings that matters.
You know, what's really interesting about that you've pointed out, and I don't think I've heard it stated quite like that, that there is a difference between feelings and behaviors. And I feel what, you know, and I will say this as myself, you know, just, you know, from my own perspective being a parent, that sometimes we wrap them or group them together. You assume that just because a child's action is one thing, it automatically equals their feelings. What I found to be really interesting, though, is that as my child or my children have gotten older, my oldest being about 11 and a half now, teenagers are a little different. It's kind of funny because it's like that movie, what is it, Inside Out, yes, where they have different parts of their behavior and feelings that they then can tap into when they get a little older. And it's kind of like seeing that, I think in the movie they show it kind of like as a command center where different parts of the headquarters start to activate and start to light up. And so as I've start to see my children get older, obviously the communication and the behaviors get a far more sophisticated, but then so do those feelings. And I think what might be difficult for some parents out there to understand or how to navigate might be to how to respond when you experience a new feeling from your child or a new expression from your child. Is this anything that you've had any experience with in your line of work? And what advice could you give to parents who might have, you know, maybe a range of ages in their household? So they might have a 3-year-old versus like 6 or 7-year-old, and then a child that might be a little bit older, a tween even.
When it comes to younger kids, you're just going to use some simple words, right? Mad, sad, scared. And you can build their vocabulary slowly over time. And then, of course, yeah, when you get into the tween years, you're going to see some behavior and some moods that really stem beyond that, when they're irritable, they're frustrated, they're disappointed. And so to just keep helping them recognize, okay, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm going through. There's a lot of power in just naming a feeling. But we don't really talk about feelings that much. Most of us don't. And when we do, sometimes it's in a way of telling kids, well, don't be upset, or you shouldn't worry about that. And those are really not the messages we want to send. We want to teach kids, no, it's okay to worry. It's okay to be upset. Here's how we're going to handle it, and to give them the skills of how they're going to deal with their emotions. Mm-hmm. And so for younger kids, sometimes if they just don't quite have the language to say how they're feeling, sometimes you can use a scale of 1 to 10, a thermometer, something that they can use to even point to a one of those emoji charts that has the different faces on it. And you start there. And then as kids get older, maybe you have a list of feeling words that you print out and you hang on your refrigerator. And you can ask them, I get the idea you might be feeling disappointed right now. Is that right? And they'll clarify for you if they have the language to do it. And I think when we just start expanding their vocabularies, when we get more familiar with talking about feelings, because I find a lot of adults struggle with it too. We don't really talk about feelings that much in the adult world either. But when you practice, when you start saying, yeah, here's how I'm feeling today, how about you? And kids just become more comfortable with it over time. And there's so much power in that. Kids that can learn to name their feelings will then figure out, well, what do I do with this feeling? Is it helpful right now or not helpful? And I talk a lot about that too, about helping kids realize when their feelings are a friend or an enemy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're angry, your feeling's a friend. Maybe it helps you stand up for your friend at school that's getting bullied, but maybe it's an enemy because it got you in trouble because you ripped up somebody's paper or you said something you didn't mean. Mm-hmm. So it's really just about starting with the basics and then expanding from there, teaching kids, how do you name your feelings? And then how do you deal with those feelings in a healthy way?
That's just fabulous expert advice. And honestly, I wouldn't expect anything less from you. So thank you so much for that. I'd like to know from you, because I know that there's been some time between, you know, since the time the book was written to now, there's obviously been so many different changes that the youth and children are going through right now that they hadn't really experienced before. And the one that I'm thinking of, you know, right now, which is quite the most obvious one, is the fact that they are now living through a pandemic. I know that children around the United States are going through a very different educational academic experiences right now. I do know some children are back in school. Others haven't quite made it back. I know mine are not back yet. And so for me, I think what has been interesting is talking to other parents on how to get their children to effectively communicate what they're feeling right now during this time of uncertainty, but then also how the parent, should they themselves manage or sandwich their own emotions based off of what they're witnessing their children go through. Do you have any tips that you can share with parents on how to help keep their children mentally resilient right now while still giving them the space to experience this very kind of unknown time?
I'm glad you asked that because it is such a bizarre time. So Very Well Mind, it's a site that I write articles for, and they did a survey about online therapy and what people are talking about in online therapy. 79% of parents said that they have been talking to an online therapist about the stress they're experiencing about sending their kids to school this year. Mm-hmm. You think, you know, what unprecedented times. In the past, parents didn't worry about sending their kids to school. And now that's a huge concern. We're concerned about safety. We're concerned about what that's going to do to their psychological health when they're wearing masks, when they can't have recess, when they aren't able to be with their friends. And these are all very valid concerns to have. So I think one of the most important thing that parents can do is to acknowledge what they're going through. And it's okay. You don't want to burden young children with your fears, but it's okay to talk to your kids about, this is weird, this is strange, this is different, we've never done anything like this before. But then to keep the focus on what everybody's doing to keep everybody safe. So instead of saying, this is awful that you have to go to school, and it's terrible that you have to wear a mask, and it's incredible that you don't get to have recess, this isn't fair. Instead, you want to send a message that says, here's what we're doing to keep everybody safe. And this is why we're doing it. And it sort of empowers kids to know that they're not a victim of this cruel twist of fate that we're in at the moment, but instead that they feel empowered to know, okay, if I wear a mask, I can keep other people safe, regardless of whether you think kids should be wearing masks or not, to send them that message, or to say, you know, this is what your teacher is doing to help everybody in the classroom stay healthy this year. And this is why we're doing that. And it just has a slightly different twist on it so that kids then feel more like they're empowered. And for kids that are working from home and attempting to do school through online learning, you know, again, I think just acknowledge that this is tough. And to cut the kids some slack this year in terms of their academics, and to know that when you've got a 7-year-old who's trying to do online learning, they're going to face a lot of challenges that other kids don't. And again, the rules, just typical rules, don't apply. A couple of years ago, we were just focused on not giving kids too much screen time. And now we're asking a lot of kids to sit behind their screens all day long. And so I think it's just important to acknowledge some of the elephants in the room. This is really difficult. And to help kids identify, how are you feeling about this? Is it frustrating? What's tough about it? And then you also might recognize some bright sides. Well, what's really good about what's going on this year? Maybe you got to know some different kids. Maybe you are enjoying eating lunch at home, whatever it is, but talk to your kids about the fact that there can be some pluses and minuses to whatever their situation is. And again, acknowledge their feelings and don't be afraid to acknowledge yours sometimes too, to say, this is difficult that we're all at home all day long, or this is difficult for us that you can't play soccer after school. And here's how I feel about it. How about you? And when you just invite kids to have those open conversations, I think it can help them feel a lot better.
Now, one thing I think is kind of spot on with what you said is that I know, for example, in my timeline, there are far more advertisements for mental health services, telehealth, teletherapy in my timeline than ever before. Are there any that, and I don't know if you know, but are there any that you would recommend over the others? Are there things that parents should look out for if they themselves are struggling with their own feelings during this time and really trying to process their feelings in a way that's healthy without putting that burden on their children, particularly if they're not used to going to a therapist or it's not something that they had considered before, you know, this fall?
Yeah, right now so many people are turning to online therapy. Some people had a therapist they saw in person and it just transitioned because of the pandemic. Other people are just reaching out to somebody for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. And I actually personally tested all the online therapy sites as a therapist so that, that I could answer this question. And so, because they're not all created equal. One of my favorites is BetterHelp. They have, they're all over the world because a lot of people in different places don't necessarily have access to a therapist. So that's one reason why I like them. Another reason is they offer telephone therapy, which not everybody does. So for people that have poor internet or they don't have a great connection or they don't want to Zoom in their living room in front of everybody, you can take the phone into your bedroom and actually talk to somebody on the phone. And another reason why I like them is because they offer financial assistance. Because one of the biggest barriers I hear from people is I can't afford therapy. Well, if you give them your financial statistics and you qualify, they'll help you pay for treatment. And there's a lot of different ways to talk to a therapist. Most of the websites offer different strategies. So if you want to, say, have a live video session, you can chat with a therapist one-on-one. If you prefer to just message somebody throughout the day, you can do that too. Sometimes you can live chat with a therapist. So they all offer a little bit something different. Some of them have couples therapy. Some of them offer therapy for teenagers. Talkspace is a great one, but BetterHelp is another one that has some really good services and people tend to really like it.
Yeah, I think I heard that about BetterHelp as well, that they offered some type of a scholarship program or something that would factor in, you know, how much money that you had to put towards any course of treatment or being able to work with a therapist. And so I think too that, yes, that is a tremendous feature, because for some people, you know, seeing a therapist or being able to work with somebody, you know, is wonderful, but it can be cost prohibitive. And so I know just based on my own research that that one in particular did happen to mention that on the website. So that's wonderful. Thank you so much for your feedback. And I mean, that's kind of cool. You got to try them all out, you know?
Yeah, I was curious. So I thought, let's test all the major ones and see how they're different. And as a therapist, I'd never really thought online therapy would be as effective, to be honest. I thought, well, face-to-face therapy is important. You get to see people's body language. You can, see, when you see them face-to-face, you communicate differently. But mm-hmm. going through all that, I realized that there's actually quite a few benefits to online therapy that you don't get in face-to-face therapy. You don't necessarily need childcare. It's more flexible. You can chat pretty much anytime you want. And if it works better for you to have to chat in the evenings, you can do that. There's so many barriers sometimes to getting to a therapist's office. So I do think online therapy can be quite effective.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that we are coming to the end of the episode, but one thing I did want to touch on that I was unaware of is that you have a children's book coming out, you said, next year?
I do. So sort of after the parenting book came out, parents were saying, well, okay, great. And now exactly how do I give my kids these skills and tools in a way that reinforces to them, okay, that what mom and dad are teaching me, it's working out well. So my book is called 13 Things Strong Kids Do, mm-hmm. and it will come out in April, and it's really geared towards, say, the 8 to 13-year-old market.
Oh my goodness. This is exciting. I did not know that you had a new book on the way. And thank you so much for kind of giving us an idea of around what age groups that that book would be ideal for. Now I'm like, ooh, I might have to kind of pre-order one for my tween, because it seems like that she kind of fits into that age group.
It was so fun to write a kid's book. And we moved up the on sale date just because it's been such a rough year for kids. So we're trying to get it out there as fast as we can so that parents have this new tool to give to their kids.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to share with us any of those 13 things that kids can do? Or we have to kind of wait until the spring to get more details?
Yeah, I'm happy to share. So we talk a lot about persistence and perseverance, and I give kids different strategies to deal with their uncomfortable feelings. And every chapter's got a fun illustration, a story, but then it's got really clear-cut exercises about how do you deal with negative thinking? How do you manage uncomfortable feelings like anger? And how do you keep going even when you don't want to?
Oh my goodness. It sounds delightful. For those of you guys who are unaware of how to find her books, we're going to go ahead and put that information in the description box and the show notes for this particular episode. But we invite you, you know, if you have any questions or feedback based on our conversation today, to sound off on social media. Of course, you can mention us, you can use the show hashtag, you can do the at symbol to make sure that you properly tag Gymboree Playing Music, and we'll jump into the comments. We will address your comments, any concerns that you might have. And of course, Amy will be available as well if you just want to tag her. She's actually pretty accessible. And so I would absolutely encourage you to reach out to her if you have any personal or private questions around any of the content in her books, anything that was mentioned here on this episode, and of course, for her upcoming project that's going to come out next spring. Thanks for joining us on the season premiere of the Parent Pod podcast for Gymboree Playing Music. Feel free to sound off on social media, tag us, or carry the discussion over to your home, to your groups, to your friends and family. That's what this is all about. We are excited that you joined us today, and we look forward to connecting with you on the next episode of The Parent Pod. I keep dancing with everybody, there's a lot of-